Good morning, everybody, in this cozy group. Thank you all for being there. And so I was asked yesterday to if I could do a talk for today. And usually I spend a lot of time, like weeks, preparing a talk. So this is going to be a little bit more autobiographical. So I hope it's useful, entertaining, whatever. So we're in the we're in can you all hear me okay? Yeah, okay. And I can see you. So we're in the parasha of Behar, which means on the mountain. And there's a blessing in this parasha. That is, I guess I could call it the name of the talk, which is stop. Stop on Shabbat. Stop to give the earth and those who work the earth a break. Going to turn that off. There we go. So this week's parasha, Behar, means on the mountain, referring to Sinai. And what came forth from Sinai? All the rules and laws and aspirations for a compassionate civilization. And Behar is that wide-angle vision that uplifts us when we stand at the peak of the mountain and get a long view of this earth. And trust me that the climb up Mount Sinai, what's supposedly Mount Sinai, is indeed high. And you peer out over many, many peaks that gradually descend to the beaches of the Red Sea. Which I enjoyed experiencing snorkeling off the beaches of Dahab with the sharks off the Sinai Desert. So those years that I was living in Israel and visiting and escaping to the Sinai, there were no buildings, no roads, no plumbing. And you sort of had to depend, if you were just a couple of people traipsing through the wilderness, you had to depend on the Bedouins who knew where and how to live on the land. And so they had created a few reed-woven partitions. Just very, by hand, so that you could roll out your sleeping bag at the shores of the Sinai, shores of the Red Sea, and sleep without being buffeted by the wind. So, no buildings, no roads, no plumbing, no hotels, no bathrooms, but a deep stillness. No machines, no nothing except the wind and what we carried on our backs. No noise from the usual cacophony of the city, where in those days, in Jerusalem, everyone seemed to drive with their hand on the horn of their car. So I climbed Mount Sinai, what is supposedly Mount Sinai, several times. One time I climbed and at the very peak, and it takes a long time to get up there, it takes many hours. But when I got up there, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir was singing at the sunrise. It's kind of magical. So I ran to the Sinai like a refuge during the time I was doing the intensity of the work with Palestinians and Israelis together. And it was the 1970s when Israel signed a peace treaty with Egypt and with Jordan. And there has not been any bloodshed between those two countries, or three, since then. And that was another kind of precious Shabbat, the stopping of hostilities, which enabled me to explore Egypt and Jordan. The Parashah Behar contains commandments to do and to act in ways that seem inconceivable to me now. They are so beyond how our societies have developed and are developing. For example, God communicates to Moses the laws of the sabbatical year. Every seventh year, all work on the land should cease, and its produce becomes free for the taking for all, including humans and animals. Then, seven sabbatical cycles are followed by the 50th year, the Jubilee, on which work on the land again ceases. All indentured servants are set free. All ancestral estates in the Holy Land that have been sold revert to their original owners. This is like totally challenging to this hardy capitalist milieu that we live in. It is, in fact, utterly inconceivable and revolutionary. Such a high standard of care for people and the earth, almost like a fairy tale or a vision of how things could be, but one that points towards creating a viable way to live on this earth so that its people and the very soil that enables people to live will have a critically needed rest. The Torah offers incredible guidelines for living without the continual abuse of the land that feeds us and the people that work the land. The Bedouins that I met and walked with in Sinai have lived for eons on this parched land, a land that is often baking hot. Beyond the apparently treeless terrain are wadis, or hidden river valleys, whose sparse water is a miracle that nurtures ancient agricultural practices. Flowing between the peaks, they may form a small stream to feed unexpected greenery, or what they would call an oasis. When my not yet husband and I would hike in the Sinai, we were often approached by very generous Bedouins who introduced us to their amazing land. They would turn around in their tracks and walk with us for days without wanting any remuneration, showing us secret pear gardens, where they say were the golden pears. They taught us to make pita directly in the sand, mixing flour with a tiny bit of the water from a sack to form kind of like a round disc that you threw into the sand and then covered with sand, and then covered the sand with burning embers from some small twigs of a lone acacia tree that grew here and there. And somehow they figured out how, and then, oh, and then at the as the embers come to cool off, you brush away the sand, you lift out the disc that has now become pita bread, and then you take a rock and you bang the pita bread until all the sand falls off, and it's delicious, fresh baked pita in the sand. In Bihar, on that mountain, we were offered an expansive perspective, a glimpse of expanded consciousness, a deep sense of interconnection of everything and everyone. Also, no less important, was finding different ways for what we euphemistically call going to the bathroom, when in reality, there is no bathroom. And it's on that mountain where Parsha Bahar teaches that we are to live on the land in ways that are productive and not destructive. And it should come as no surprise that there was a generative link between that which guides us to live on the land without destroying it and the teaching of the Torah about rest, about stopping. The Torah is so repetitively adamant about stopping one's normal activities for one whole day every week. It insists on rest. The star of the week is Shabbat. The word Shabbat means stop, rest, end. And I have to say that I carry regret and like a low level of constant disappointment or even maybe chronic shame for not observing the rest to the fullest extent. The deepest practice of Shabbatting for me has always come when there is a structured communal container. So for example, that is something I first experienced in my Grandma Esther and Grandpa Herman's tiny apartment on Walton Avenue in the Bronx, 3 blocks from the Yankee Stadium, across the street from Franz Siegel Park, where I played under bushes that hid me in my first experience of wilderness, across the street from the Bronx County Courthouse, big, massive granite structure. Both the courthouse and the park provided great opportunities for climbing and adventuring, including the concrete sidewalks for roller skating. Every day, my grandma would walk from her apartment, which was in the same building as ours, to the corner store to stock up on goods needed to gather to feed all of us every Shabbat, every Friday night. And every Friday night, my parents, my brother, and I would walk down from our fourth floor apartment to the first floor apartment of my grandma and grandpa. There we were joined by my cousin Ira, whose 90th birthday I'm about to attend in New York in a couple of weeks, and my Aunt Ida and Uncle Willie, his parents, who walked from their third floor apartment to the first floor for Shabbat together. All the adults were more relaxed and happy than any time during the week. Spent a lot of time laughing, which was great to hear as a little one, until many decades later, I deciphered that they were probably laughing at disparaging remarks that my Uncle Willie, who was perhaps a Yeki, a German Jew, looked down his nose on the rest of us or on other kinds of Jews. But I was small enough to delight in their laughter and seeing our grown-ups so relaxed. An equally formative Jewish experience of stopping to observe Shabbat was when they sent me to Jewish summer camp, Camp Eisner in the Berkshires. Actually, you know, what did they know from summer camps that they had never had? So my parents asked around, and the first summer camp they sent me to turned out to be a horseback riding camp, where of course I fell in love with the horses, appropriately Freudian. And when I returned home, I insisted on finding a place to ride horses, which they finally agreed on. And that fateful day, I was happily riding in the rink when the horse suddenly stopped, put down his head, and rolled me over his head onto the sand. That was my last experience horseback riding. So my parents asked around again, and this time sent me to the Reform Jewish Camp Eisner in the Berkshires, where the song leaders were as heart-opening as Peter, Paul, and Mary. And the dancing was wild, with us all decked out in Shabbos whites, everyone wearing white. It was like a rave after each Shabbos meal, with singing and dancing and romance in the air. And once a week, we all wore this beautiful white. And it really wasn't easy to find white jeans then. But we fell in love with each other and in the thrall of falling in love with the song leaders who surreptitiously lured us to fall in love with Judaism. And finally, I especially loved Shabbat in Jerusalem. There was a crazy rush on Friday afternoon to get all of what you needed to survive when all the stores were closed for 26 hours for Shabbat, starting with sundown. You could not call anyone or drive anywhere, so you could walk in the carless streets of the then small city and knock on friends' doors, or meet them milling about the city. For a whole city to be geared to support people stopping was nothing less than a miracle. I long to experience the depths and renewal of the practice that is Shabbat. But I'm often helpless in the force of the ever-flowing life that thwarts my attempts to slow down and live differently for 26 hours. So I find some comfort in Rabbi Larry Kushner's teaching that the words of the commandment to Shabbat, to stop, are to keep the Sabbath and also to remember the Sabbath, Zachor v'Shamor. My body does not always keep the Sabbath the way and with all those details that were commanded, but I'm always aware and anchored in that day. I think Bahar's deep teaching about keeping the Sabbath, as I think of that teaching as a time of not doing, a time to stop, that is so essential to leading a genuine human life. It's also a profound teaching for our practice. But first, let's take a glimpse of the depths of Bahar's teaching about Shabbat for our practice of meditation. Our practice is in many ways based on the Torah's wisdom that without stopping, we cannot be fully human. We cannot be fully connected to the source of being. Perhaps this is opportunity to be human. This opportunity to be human is so heavily loaded that if we don't step back and hold our heart, mind, body with some compassionate awareness, we're likely to unnecessarily increase our suffering. When I sit in the mists of silence, with awareness of this body, this mind, this breath, I am also host to seemingly an endless stream of thoughts, feelings, sensations, stories. And it's so moving to me that there are people who would be willing to sit in stillness and in doing so-called nothing. There is some way that the teaching of the parasha, Behar, in a similar way lifts up what is noble and humble and important about regular stopping. And in that stopping, there is a divine in-breath and a divine out-breath. And there are utterances from the heart, and tears and joys, confusion and clarity, and gratitude for the possibility of returning to that which breathes us into being, into this ever new moment. So we persist in finding our awkward or glorious or humble ways as best we can to observe the injunction of Behar to stop. We set aside time in a regular way to be in compassion with our runaway minds, hearts, bodies. We set time aside to allow our hearts to break or to be with this out of control world. And we deepen commitment to let go with the outbreath and to greet what comes in anew on the in-breath. And perhaps let our hearts be broken or horrified or joy-filled or filled with insight and readiness to open to the flow of mystery that binds us in love. So I'll take a couple of minutes to be silent, and then I'm curious to hear your relationship to Shabbat, what you love, what you struggle with, how you regard stopping. What are your experiences now or in the past or for plans for the future. So let's be quiet.